It's Song Talk Radio.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. Dialing in from our headquarters in Toronto, I'm Neil Modi, and with me, my usual co-host, Phil Emery. How you doing, Phil?
I am very happy because I'm very healthy. Heather came home last week from a trip and developed COVID, and I've somehow managed to not catch it. So it is possible. You have to take a lot of precautions, but I did. So she's over COVID and I haven't got COVID. So
nice.
Yay me. Yeah.
Awesome. Well done. All that wiping and hand sanitizing pays off, isn't it?
That's true. Masks. And it does help having a couple of bedrooms. So.
Right. Not breathing over each other all the time.
Yes.
Great. Dear. For everyone else, please send your comments and questions to @songtalkradio on Facebook or Instagram, feedback@songtalk.ca for the email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. And please visit songtalk.ca to see the show post for this episode, find links to resources we mention, and to download lyric and chord sheets to follow along with the songs that we feature. Tonight, we're very happy to welcome Canadian singer-songwriter Alex Worms back to the show. How you doing, Alex?
I am very well, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, great to have you back on the show. This has got to be like your fifth, sixth time on the road.
Something like that, for sure.
Like that.
Yeah,
becoming one of our favorite, most featured guests.
I mean, you're one of my favorite shows, for sure.
Awesome.
So it's mutual.
Great to hear that. Okay. And speaking of getting back to us on stuff, we got an email last week from our good friend Stuart Cook, who's a songwriter and a fan of the podcast, living in merry old England. He's contributed to our songwriting challenges in past years.
He's
so great.
Great
to hear. Yeah, he's a swell guy. It's always good to hear from Stuart. So he wrote to us and said, "Hi, I just listened to the amateur of the episode we did on things that make you sound like an amateur. That was a couple of weeks ago that we did with Jessica Stewart reacting to the Song Town podcast video about, 10 things that annoy them when they hear a song and think, oh, this must be an amateur songwriter. So that was a fun little episode and a lot of resources on that and stuff. So anyway, Stewart writes back to us, says, interesting episode. Not sure I wholeheartedly agree with some of it. I'll listen again and see if my thoughts change. I do feel that you seem to be caught in the thrall of having to be commercial. I know many writers who want to do no more than just satisfy their own desire to set down their thoughts and ideas in a song for their local audience and no more than that. When the next idea comes along, they move on. Does it have to appeal to the radio, CD sales, or Bandcamp sales? I don't think it does. I admit that your world of production and commercialism, as against my live acoustic folk world, have very different directions and values, but it is a wide world. Take a listen to Richard Thompson, Clive Gregson, Harvey Andrews, Kieran Halton, and Ewan Carruthers. My favorite song at the moment is Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by the Albion Band, written by Ashley Hutchins and sung by Kathy Lesser. I've never heard of any of those people. So great. And thanks for writing in, Stuart.
Thanks, Stuart.
Yeah, we actually did kind of comment on that episode about how the Songtown guys seem to be not necessarily about commercialism necessarily, but very kind of Nashville 101. Like you're in the studio with several collaborators and you do want to make a hit ultimately, right? And they were kind of attacking everything. They didn't say so explicitly, but that seemed to be the vibe that they were rolling with. But yeah.
Well, I certainly understand what Stuart is saying.
Yeah.
But there, if you're listening to this podcast, you're pretty serious about getting better at writing songs, regardless why you're wanting to get better at writing songs. You want to communicate better. It doesn't mean that you necessarily want to be a professional, but you want to make your art better. So like anyone can buy a bunch of paint and slap it on some paper. But sometimes taking a course on basic composition helps you get where you want faster and more efficiently, and you actually get better results. It doesn't mean that you're going to be professional. It's just getting better at what you do. It's like learning how to play your instrument. But yeah, I mean, definitely Songtown is very much about writing on demand, and, you know, they're very focused in that kind of world. But there's nothing wrong with just doing music for the joy. And I think that's where I am at this point in my life. I'm not trying to write or, you know, being in a band or anything. So things change, and nothing wrong with just doing it for yourself, but it doesn't mean you can't get better. What do you think, Alec?
I think I have to go and listen to this episode, because this is a really interesting topic to discuss, for sure. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think write songs. It doesn't matter, you know, what your goals are. If your goals are to write songs for yourself or for a small audience, do that. If you want to, if you're really, really trying to get a big, giant, you know, sync deal, or if you're trying to write a song for a very famous pop star, your goals are going to be different and your standards are going to be different, and the things you find important are going to be completely different. So yeah, I definitely think it depends on the context.
yeah, for sure. And one of the things we mentioned on that podcast too is the whole term amateur, right? Like, what does that actually mean? And then, like, the last few years I've kind of adopted this moniker of like passionate amateur, right? Because I'm an amateur in the sense of I'm not making very little or close to nil money from music. It's not my main hustle. So it's fine just to write it for myself, and I'm in a band and all that sort of stuff, but we just do it, you know, for fun mostly. And you know, but the point is, amateur doesn't really say anything about the quality of your songwriting. So you can sort of adopt some of the things that professional songwriters do and professional musicians do, adopt some of their techniques and things like that. It just means that you're not making money from it. It's still, you know, the word itself, derived from the Latin amateurus or whatever it is, like, it just means that you love what you're doing.
Absolutely.
If you love what you're doing, you're an amateur. It doesn't mean that the quality of your stuff is less. Means that you're passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah. No, I and people always come to me, like, at shows and stuff, like people who have heard me and my music maybe for the first time, and they want to say hi. And I get a lot of people going, oh yeah, well, you know, like, I write a little bit, or I used to play an instrument and I'm not as good as I'd like to be anymore. And, you know, making all these excuses as if they have to apologize for not pursuing music as a career. And I always say, like, no, that's great. Like, keep, you know, playing your little bit of piano or, like, whatever it is that you're doing. There's no reason to feel apologetic about what, I mean, even the pros are not making very much money, most of us, on music anyway, right? So I feel like everyone should be able to very proudly say, I'm writing music, and that's wonderful. That's
absolutely
my attitude towards it anyway.
Okay. And like we like to say, especially at our meetup group, like, we're very much about the craft. We're about, you know, we're never there to say, oh, your song's never going to make it on the radio. We don't care about that, right? We just care about, are you reaching your audience? If that's one of your goals, what are you trying to do with your song? And let's talk about it. And that's all. And there's no, you know, we as the host, we're not like the jury or anything like that. We just open it up to the group and everyone provides feedback. And, you know, that's what we kind of try to do with this podcast too, is just focus on, you know, what makes the song tick. That's all we really care about.
And it's so fun.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with getting better at what you do. That's really what this is just a way of getting better at writing songs. That's literally our mission statement.
Yes.
Yeah. And what a worthwhile mission it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And speaking of ways to make your songwriting better, another heads up about our songwriting challenge, to write a song in an odd time signature. That's our challenge this year. Please send in your songs to us by November the 10th, 2025. Send an email to feedback@songtalk.ca. Give us the MP3, a lyric sheet with the chords, preferably, and especially the time signature. Time signature or time signatures you're using in the song, so we have a little heads up as to what we're listening for. And a little paragraph about, you know, what you went through with the songwriting challenge and how you tackled it and all that stuff. And we'll read your narrative on the air and play your song on the air and talk about it. A little bit. I know you've contributed to our songwriting challenge in the past, Alex.
I think the Christmas ones.
Have you ever played around with odd time signatures in your pop songwriting? You probably have in your film work, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I can't, there are a couple songs. I could push it further in my pop songwriting for sure. And I really, really like 11, actually. Something about 11 is really satisfying to me.
11-4?
Yeah, well, anything like in, or like 11-8 or where the pulse is in. I really like that. I also really like, I mean, 7 is nice too. There's 7, there's something about 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, that just feels really good. And there's, you know, a song that, you know, you probably, it's a not, the artist, there's an artist named Curry, K-U-R-I. Who, one of my favorite songs ever, it's called Everyone's Tired. You know, it's not a big hit or anything. It's an indie release in 7. Oh, it's one of my favorite songs. You should check it out. I love that song in 7, and it's perfect. It just, the rhythm shifts, you know, from 3 to 4. It's such a small change, but it's consistent, and something about it just feels really, really good. So I think this is a challenge I should try, because you almost don't notice in that song, Everyone's Tired. You almost don't notice that it's not in 4. But it just means that, you know, the beginning of each phrase is just a little shorter than you think it is. And it helps propel the song along without wasting a beat that I guess he figured he didn't really need.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a challenge in and of itself, is to, in any context, odd time signature or not, but to do something weird and make it sound like it's not weird.
I've definitely, one thing I do fairly often is occasionally, like if a song is in 4-4, occasionally have a bar of 2, you know, in between sections just to get there a little faster.
Which is just being intentional about it, right? And saying, I want the energy to change a little bit here. Let's insert a 2-4 bar and go. And that's a good way to start playing with odd time signatures, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way that helps you feed that pop algorithm and shorten your song a little bit.
There's always that. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done that, actually. I should try that out.
I've certainly done it by accident. Even in one of the songs in my band, Base Shelter, I wrote it and I was like, wait a minute. I inserted a 2-4 bar in the middle of, it's like the middle of the chorus. And I was like, because then I was trying to line it up in the dawn, and like things were off by 2 beats. I was like, what's going on here? And I didn't even realize that. And then I'm the drummer in the band, and I have the hardest time with some of those fills because I keep forgetting it's a 2-4.
Right. And did you find, when you noticed that you had done that, did you decide that your instinct to have that 2-4 bar was the right choice? Or did you go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because again, the energy was right. It was just natural. It just naturally flowed that way. The melody flowed that way. And it just worked better. Yeah, for sure. So I didn't like, oh, this can't be, we can't have a 2-4 bar.
Right. And it's really cool when that happens. Like there have been times where, you know, I've written everything, you know, in 4 the whole way through and then gone, okay, you know, here I really only think I need 2 beats in between chorus 2 and the bridge. So we're just going to do a fill there and go right into it. And it feels good. But there are other times where I've accidentally done something like, well, not accidentally, but, you know, I'm in a flow state with the writing and something like that just happens. And then I notice it later and realize it's actually better if I don't do it. So, you know, it's always interesting. It really depends on, again, the song and your goals for the song and what you're trying to do. But it's super, super fun when fun little accidents like that happen. And it's always
that sort of thing where you just make something happen, you know, like you said, not necessarily by accident, but unintentionally.
Yeah.
Right. And then you look at it again and go, well, what if I do adjust it and play with it this way, that way, and see what happens. And then your critical brain steps in and says, yeah, this is good. This is not so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing your challenge answer.
Yeah, me too.
Get a chance to send that in.
I look forward to hearing, to writing mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Still got to do mine. But thank you to everyone. Yeah. Thanks to everyone who's been sending in your songs already. We already received a few and it's been great.
That's the problem when you have, I think, a deadline that's too far away.
Yeah.
It's almost like better we should just say, hey, it's due next month, and then you just scramble and get it done as opposed to worrying about three months.
And that's what most songwriting challenges I've dealt with have done is like there are months, sometimes they're a day or a week. you know, we announced this thing, what, in March? And it's September now? October? It's October now. It's October 1st.
Yeah.
So...
It's a year-long challenge.
It is. We do a challenge every year.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And we talk about it early enough, and we have a resource page on the website, songtalk.ca. Check it out. And there's lots of videos to go through. There's previous episodes where we touch on these things. There's even a link to every guest who's had an on-time signature in their song just happened to be, you know, you can spend hours just listening to content on our website.
Yeah.
With all this stuff.
And I have, actually. I still haven't come across that. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah.
All right. Let's get on to the main event.
Let's do it.
Alex Worms crafts music that is a genre unto itself. On her feet, dancing behind her keyboard, the singer, songwriter, and screen composer flows freely between styles and sounds, flawlessly blending indie, alternative, folk, pop, jazz, and almost anything else that strikes her fancy, investing everything with honest tales and authentic emotions drawn from her own life. The Hamilton Arts Award winner has appeared on national TV, CBC Radio, and festival stages including Toronto Pride, Supercrawl, and Canadian Music Week. She's currently on tour with her band promoting her fourth EP, Daylight Chasing Dusk. Tonight we're going to be listening, talking to Alex about her new song, Wrong. Be sure to download the lyric sheet on the show post at songtalk.ca so you can follow along. Let's take a listen.
Let's sting a rain. Every sunny day I can take it, dry my face. In the morning and just embrace it. I'm so tired of lying, tired of hiding. Tears behind.
I like how the snare what is it, every four bars hits on the one and as mm-hmm. opposed to the two, which I always thought. Mm-hmm. It's a real subtle thing, but it works really well. It's cool. It's a nice way of adding just a little bit of interest to a track that's, instead of just going two and four, every now and then having the snare hit on the end one.
Thanks for noticing that detail.
I'm a drummer, so I totally noticed that detail.
Of course. Yeah. And well, the one of the main producer on this EP, Michael Keir, is also a drummer. So you'll hear a lot of inventive drum ideas on this EP. And that's a detail that I'm really proud of and I really enjoy about it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really about finding the groove of the song, right? And really working with it and kind of supporting that as well. But yeah, this is a super interesting song. The thing I really love about this song is the way that your melodies and your lyrical phrasing doesn't quite line up. Like there's always some overlap and interruption of lines in the same melody and that sort of thing, right? The only other songwriter that I really noticed that does that almost like really, really well is James Blunt. Right.
Oh.
He does that a lot. And I've always loved that about him. And it's one of those things that's like, it's like Nashville 101 would be like, you know, natural cadence of the language. You must put your phrasing the way that you would speak it and put it into these nice, neat little boxes. And that makes it more intelligible and you communicate your thing. But, you know, I don't think you lose anything by you shifting things like that. But I don't know. Was this a lyric or melody thing first for you? Kind of wonder.
Well, I mean, this one, I typically write lyrics and melody simultaneously. So this, not always, but I would say 9 out of 10 times. So this song came about that way. And this is kind of rare. Usually the first lyric idea that comes to me is not the hook of the song, but in this case it was that, "Wrong just feels so right" came to me first. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I built the song from that idea. I think it was chorus first and then verses after. And I think rhythmically, you're talking about kind of the cadence of the words. Having "Wrong just feels so right" start on that offbeat there. That was a thing that happened in editing. First draft, it was, "Can't help the way I feel this time. Wrong just feels so right." And of course, making that change, "Wrong just feels so right," having it happen on the offbeat makes it flow way better. And also kind of thematically, the song kind of talking about things feeling wrong or feeling off. I wanted to represent that in the melody and in the instrument parts as well. So things being off, like, you know, half a beat off from where they would normally be here and there, things like that are very much, you know, adhering to the big picture and the message of the song.
Yeah. I mean, the "Wrong it feels so right" part actually in some ways feels more stable than some of the other part. Like what I'm referring to is like, "And I don't feel inspired to come into the light." Yeah. "And I don't want an answer." You know, you're not putting it, "I don't feel inspired."
Yeah.
You know, like logic would dictate, "I don't feel inspired" is one phrase. "Let's sing it as one melody." "To come into the light" would be another segment.
Absolutely.
Right? This sort of thing, but you're breaking it in an unexpected place, which just shifts the expectation a little bit, which I don't know. I just find that really, really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. And I would say like for that, like the whole song is about feeling, right? So I really wanted to, it felt right to emphasize that word and make that break there to me. Like it's like, "Oh, I feel this way. I feel that way. I feel," but cool. Cool that you would think that. Yeah.
Did the song go through a lot of changes in the writing process, or was it kind of a one and done thing?
This one, you know, I think in terms of melody, chord progression for verses and chorus, it didn't undergo a huge number of changes. Like lyrically, definitely. Lyrics are always the last thing for me to kind of chisel into making sense. I don't always know exactly what I'm trying to say until later on. And this song, it was like, so lyrically, it did go through a lot of different drafts. What actually took a very long time to land on was the bridge. I don't think I had a bridge until the morning we were of the session where we were recording the lead vocal, and that clicked into place, thankfully, like just right in time. I think deadlines, just like what you were saying before, but I think like verses and choruses, I think the main choice we ended up making was like, it's very, very simple, you know, chord wise, you know, the verse being, you know, 6-4, 6-5, and the choruses are almost the same. The choruses are 1-4-6-5. But you could play the whole song in either of those chord progressions and the melody would work. It's a fairly simple kind of pop melody, pop harmony, right? But I like one thing that one choice I remember making was having the verses start on the 6 minor, so that they're a little more of the melancholy side of things in the song. And then the chorus starting on 1 was a deliberate choice, because the chorus was meant to feel like a release, like an accepting yourself kind of chorus. So message wise, that was a thing. But yeah, with the bridge, I remember going through melodically a lot of different options because I knew I wanted to, I wanted the melody every line to push the highest note a little further and a little further and a little further. So I definitely played around a lot with which note each line of the bridge was going to reach, to kind of sound the coolest, number one, but also like, could I sing it? So that was part of the bridge. And then, and even just, you know, the words, like the line at the end of the bridge that I think really finally ties the whole song together. I've got to be real so someone knows I exist. Like that line, as I said, came a couple hours before we recorded it. And I was just, the idea came to me and I was just like, that's it. Like, that's the song. And it's kind of that line and this song actually kind of really summarize like the whole EP as well. Like I came to the studio wanting to record this song and the producer was like, wait, but are there more? So we ended up getting a whole EP kind of out from this one song. But yeah, so that's a very long answer to your question. But yes, there were edits, but it didn't, I think this final version compared to the very first draft, you know, it's still recognizable as the same song for sure, just with some polish.
Yeah. And that's a terrific way to be. I mean, you know, I do find it interesting. There seems to be a thing with you, Alex, about your bridge being like the emotional, musical high point of your songs. I've heard that from you a couple of times too. And again, it's something I realized maybe a couple of years ago now, about how a lot of my favorite songs, it's not the chorus, that's the high point of the song. It's the bridge, right? Where the bridge really amps it up and makes it super powerful, right? And then of course you drop down to like the quiet version of the chorus, right? Which is the great, great contrast line. So yeah. Another trip thing. And it's interesting how, yeah, when you're really crunched for it, you just, you know, somehow push through and make it happen, right? Because sometimes happened, you can come up with something that's just like, good enough. We have to record it this afternoon. Let's just do it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm really great. This happened. There's one other song on the EP where a similar thing happened, where one of the lines, it was like, I mean, I guess it works. And then I, right at the last minute, had an idea, a different song on the EP called Wish. There's a line that actually became the title of the EP that I really love. Like daylight chasing dusk, I wish you wanted me. And it was just like, where did that come from? But like, that's it, right? So really, really grateful, because I think I'm such a sucker for like just a really good short lyrical phrase. And yeah, I feel really grateful that those ideas appeared right in time for these songs.
Yeah. And it's when you're intensely like pondering it or whatever, but But here's the real takeaway for this, for everybody out there writing songs, right? You know, like it's okay to settle temporarily, right? Like, okay, this is good enough for now. Maybe I'll revisit this later. Maybe it will be 5 minutes before I have to record it in the studio, like, or whatever, right? But, you know, but the, in order to get to that level of so-called perfection, you do have to iterate through these, like, you know, half-assed ideas and be like, it's not quite good enough. It's not quite good enough. But then it always takes that critical ear and the critical eye to look back and, you know, a couple of days later and be like, yeah, you know what? That could be better. This part could be better. This line, nah, not as strong as it could be. Let's try and improve it. But sometimes, yeah, that doesn't happen until like days later or weeks later or months later. You finally click and be like, oh yeah, that's what that line should be. Boom. And it fills the gap and you're like, okay, now it's solid.
Mm-hmm. Alex, are you doing any kind of pre-production on these things before you're going into the studio? Because you sort of do a lot of just recording at home, but working with someone else, are you doing sort of pre-production and sort of kind of redoing it in the studio, or do you use your pre-production as the basis for what you wind up as a final? How's that working?
Yeah, almost always. All the time. Because I think like everything you heard, like even that little motif that goes, na 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 na, that all kind of came together. You know, on my end. And so I definitely, actually, it would be really interesting to kind of go back and hear what my demos sounded like compared to what we ended up with in the fully produced version. But I really enjoy, I think actually one thing that didn't end up making the recording that was in my demo was that, again, that little melodic motif that you're hearing in strings and synthesizer in the track. I think in my demo, I did that with voices. I did like a big stacked vocal and I made it like an thing. And we didn't end up doing that in this version, but I really enjoy, I'm not ready to fully produce all my own music yet, but I've taken some producer training. Even last summer I was in the SoCan Foundation Equity X production level 2 course. So I'm not completely useless. I can do quite a bit. And I really find it fun. It's a really great songwriting tool as well. Because especially for me, I am thinking quite a lot ahead in terms of what the fully produced versions of my songs will sound like as I'm writing, because I'm trying to, you know, keep building my career in this. So it's an important consideration for me. So it's an important part of my writing to have Logic open and to be fiddling around with sounds and stuff as I'm writing.
Yeah, that's very cool. We had a guest on the podcast a while back, Bill. I don't recall who it was, but she was saying, yeah, I'm starting to write more with a producer mindset kind of thing, like thinking about what the other instruments are doing, what the other parts are doing, but. You know, I think there's a caveat to that, that you don't want to necessarily lean on it, so that if you're just performing it, you know, one vocal, one instrument, does it still stand up on its 2 feet and still come across as a solid song, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that being said, it was written mostly on piano before I went into the DAW with this one. And that's also very important to me. Nothing more frustrating than taking a song that you love and trying to play it in an acoustic way and realizing you really just liked the production and it wasn't actually the song.
Jeez.
I won't say which artist I'm thinking of as I say that.
Oh no.
One of the great things about the home recording revolution is that I think most people who are just starting out are used to recording because they record at home all the time. Back before everyone had a recording studio at home, which basically we all do, is people would go into the studio and they would totally freeze up because they would be so freaked out because, you know, oh, I'm here for, you know, like 8 hours and we have to get all these songs done. And I think now at least people don't have to worry about that because they're so used to recording at home that it's just not a big deal. I'll punch it in or, you know, do what I have to do, but people don't freeze up as much as they used to, I don't think.
It definitely helps having the ability to practice, for sure. I mean, I will say that I had a lot of trouble. I don't have trouble now, but when we were, again, I mentioned like trying to optimize that bridge melodically for my voice and for the song itself, I had a difficult time singing the highest note in the bridge in the studio at the time. I think just that another great thing about writing songs like this is the more you perform them, the more your voice kind of grows to be able to do it. But I think there was definitely, I felt a little bit of pressure, you know, trying to nail that on the first day, and it did not happen the first day.
Oh, really?
So yeah. I think it's good to have the practice. It didn't prepare me for that part necessarily as much as I would have liked.
The whole song and bring it down a tone.
No, I think that's the other thing, right? The verses are fairly low, so
they are pretty low, right? Compared to the bridge. Yeah, there's a really large range. Yeah,
I knew I could do it because I was doing it at home and I was doing it live. And something about being in the studio, I was in my head, and you know, we were doing this massive project, and I, you know, we wanted to get it done, and so funny things can happen. It's all completely mental, right? But yeah, we got there in the end. I remember when we got the take; it was very exciting.
Yeah, it's sometimes you go into the studio and it's just not happening, and you can bash your head or you can just go home. And sometimes it's the best thing to do.
Yeah. And what you say, Phil, I think is pretty true. A lot of artists are used to the recording process and what it involves and stuff like that. I've done some producing too. And I can think of one client I had early on too, who was his whole life. He was a little bit older than me, and he was used to just playing with his acoustic guitar and singing. That's all he ever did. He never turned on a tape recorder as much. Right. And when they got him into the studio, it was a bit of a learning process for him to sort of get used to the process and how to work with a click track and all those sorts of things that you're not used to. But yeah, but you're right, Phil. Like a lot of people that have studios in their homes now, you can practice to it and fiddle around as much as you want before you go into a studio proper. Which makes me wonder, like, Alex, like why you would book a session with a studio when you hadn't finished writing your bridge yet.
Well, you know, I really admired the people I was going to work with. And, you know, he was like, okay, great. I have this week in October. And I was like, okay, great. So I just really wanted to, again, me being, you know, an emerging artist and trying to make good connections and make a good impression on people and be professional. I knew that week was available and I wanted to make it happen. And thankfully, everything worked out in time.
In some ways, it's a self-imposed deadline, but still a deadline. Got to get it done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it worked out, thankfully, and I'm really grateful. Awesome. It would have been embarrassing otherwise.
it's a great track and definitely a great EP. I've been listening to the whole EP, and it's really solid. And,
indeed. Fantastic.
Everyone check it out.
Thank you so much.
As is always.
As always, yes. Okay, I'm here in the band. I think that's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thanks again to Alex Warnes for joining us. Where can our listeners find out more about you and hear the full EP?
Well, you can check me out on social media or streaming at Alex Warnes, and my last name is spelled WHORMS. And anywhere you look, you're sure to find me somewhere. We're also, I'm on tour with my band for the rest of the year. So around Ontario, we have dates in Hamilton, Napanee, Ottawa, and Ajax coming up.
Cool. All right. We want to hear from you too. So please send us your comments, Facebook or Instagram at Song Talk Radio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. Remember, challenge deadline is November the 10th. Hey, there's that deadline word again. Gee whiz. Sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes, and subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And please support us at our Patreon page. You can visit songtalk.ca/support. Thank you to all who have supported us so far.
Thank you.
You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And please join us at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. Whether you're in Toronto for our in-person meetups or anywhere in the world for our online meetups, it's free to join on Eventbrite and free to attend the meetup. Bring a song and a lyric sheet and get constructive feedback from other songwriters. stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
Philemery.ca.
And Alex, what's your favorite social media channel? Where do you post the most?
Instagram?
Absolutely. Be sure to follow Alex there. And be sure to stop by the website, songtalk.ca, to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for tuning in, and keep on writing.